Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews the CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Mike Bolger, the NASA Kennedy Space Center's Chief Information Officer. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me on the show, Dave.
Well, let's start with some basics. NASA has many different space centers, different facilities across the country. Give us just the basic mission of what Kennedy Space Center does.
The Kennedy Space Center is the premier launch site for government and commercial space access for our nation. The Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, Space Shuttle, and Space Station programs have all launched from Kennedy and the adjacent Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, as do many of NASA's unmanned science missions. And we'll also be the launch site for the next generation heavy lift and commercial rockets. We do more than just launch and payload processing, though. We also have program management responsibilities for the Launch Services Program, which does a lot of those unmanned rockets, the Commercial Crew Program, and then ground systems and development operations responsibilities for the next generation of launch vehicles. So there's a lot that goes on at Kennedy in addition to just the things that we're most known for, which are, you know, the launches themselves.
Now, there's some interesting things that happen when you get into the details of what each facility does. Is there something maybe that most people don't realize about Kennedy beyond, as you said, what you guys are known for, which is the Mercury, Apollo, and the launch areas?
We also do a lot of specialized ground support equipment design, and we develop unique facilities and IT and comm infrastructure to support our mission. So it's not all launch. There's also a lot of design work that happens at Kennedy that probably most people don't realize.
I think that's one of the most fascinating things when I talk to people from NASA, just all the different things that happen. And you don't, you know, if you don't ask, you most of the time don't realize it. So you were the CIO at the Kennedy Space Center. Give me a sense of how you support that broad mission.
My job at Kennedy is really to lead the IT organization that enables the launch processing and the design work and the program management that happens here. We do that by providing the base IT infrastructure, the cable plant, the networks, and the data centers, and then also the end-user devices like the desktops and laptops and smartphones, the printers and pagers and cell phones that support the engineers, scientists, technicians, and support personnel at the center. We also provide inline operational systems like specialized operational television and intercom systems that allow for our engineers in our control rooms to monitor remote activities and to communicate with technicians in the field. And then we provide other services like ground camera imagery. A lot of the imagery is used for the engineering analysis from the, you know, for instance, on the space shuttle program, looking at the tile debris and things like that. We provide modeling and simulation support, applications development, new technologies, and then some more standard things like cable TV and paging and area warning. In essence, the Kennedy Space Center is like a city. And we've got about 8,000 residents who are spread across a couple hundred buildings on 140,000 acres of land. So we're running the IT and comm that keeps information flowing across that city.
Wow, 8,000 people, 140,000 acres of land. That must be an incredible challenge for you as an IT person to make sure that you can have IT out to the edge, as they say in the DOD. How do you balance that? You know, when you talk about ground camera imagery, when you talk about application development, how do you kind of make sure that things happen?
It really is about working closely with the programs who reside at Kennedy and with the customers that we have at Kennedy to make sure that we're prioritizing the dollars that we have on the requirements that are the most important to them. It's very much a sprawling infrastructure. Some of the challenges that we have are keeping up with the maintenance and the sustaining of that infrastructure. But obviously, you know, through the space shuttle program, we were very successful, and now we're moving into a phase where we're hoping to have an opportunity to upgrade some of that infrastructure for the programs of the future.
All right. Sounds like you're giving us a little bit of a heads up on some of your priorities, so we're going to touch back on those in a little bit. But before we go there, let's talk about your office a little bit. You know, 8,000 people, 140,000 acres of land. How big is your office? How many federal employees do you have? How do you depend on contractors, meaning do you have a lot of contractors that work with you? And what is your IT budget for 2012?
We have 130 civil servants, so NASA employees, who work in the IT directorate here at Kennedy. And we're supported by about 700 contractors. So it's more contractors than civil servants, by a pretty good ratio. And collectively, that team provides the kind of support that I was just describing. I directly manage an $80 million a year annual budget, and so that's money that flows directly through the IT directorate and through the CIO. And then if you include work that we're doing for the programs, that the programs fund themselves, that on the contract that we have, that number increases to about $125 million a year.
And when you talk about the ratio, it's interesting because I hear a lot of CIOs look at the ratio of employees to contractors and say we need to bring that ratio closer together. But you seem pretty confident or pretty good with in terms of what your ratio is. It's about not quite 7-1. That seems high to me, but tell me why you think that works for you guys.
We're very comfortable with that, and it's consistent with the rest of the Kennedy Space Center. We've always had a much more significant contractor presence than civil servant presence. We look to the civil servants to provide the vision and the strategy and then to perform oversight of the contractors. And the civil servants get involved in some of the design and the new technology and innovation kind of stuff too, but our contractors here are very much our partners. Contractors at Kennedy tend to spend a career at Kennedy. In other words, they're not coming and going. They tend to be here for a long time. And so we've had a very successful relationship, and we're very comfortable with that ratio that we have right now, at least for the IT department.
Now, as far as things like application development or modeling and simulation support, is that all done also by the combined team, or is it a lot of that, the more technical stuff does go to contractors?
It's a mix. We do some in-house or hands-on development, but the preponderance of the applications work is done by contractors, and they're performing it to the requirements that we establish for them. And that's the same with the other services that I talked about, whether it be ground cameras or paging and area warning or networks or cable plant. Typically, you've got a couple civil servants, and they're supported by a larger number of contractors.
All right, very good. I think that's something we see from a lot of agencies. That's where the skills are. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to jump into some of those priorities that you have. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Mike Bolger, the NASA Kennedy Space Center Chief Information Officer.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
Well, when you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screens. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests. Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ, good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. It's over. This fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to ahrq.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Mike Bolger, the NASA Kennedy Space Center Chief Information Officer. Now, Mike, before break, we talked a lot about the mission of the Kennedy Space Center, how you as the CIO support that mission. So let's talk about your priorities over the next 6 or 9 months. How are you going to improve technology across that wide, vast space center?
A couple things that we're doing that are near-term priorities that will sound a little more mundane, but they're important nonetheless to enabling our mission here. The first is that we're in the middle of a desktop and laptop refresh. We're going through a contract transition that put us behind our normal 3-year refresh cycle. And so about half of our 6,000 seats are more than three years old. So we're playing catch-up now, and we're aggressively rolling out new seats, about 400 a month to our population here. And we're also giving them new software for the PC-based people. It's Windows 7 and Office 2010, and on the Mac side, Office 2011. We're also working an initiative to encrypt our mobile devices, specifically targeting our laptops right now. And there's an agency plan to get our laptops encrypted by the end of the fiscal year. Previously, we at Kennedy had about 500 laptops encrypted. Those were users who had self-identified that they had PII or sensitive information on there. Unfortunately, you might have seen in the news, that didn't work for us. We've recently had an issue, and so we're really upping the priority and trying to get that those laptops encrypted sooner rather than later. We're also working an initiative on information management, and this is a broader and maybe a little bit longer-term initiative. We're trying to make it easier for people to find information. Today, we have a lot of information silos, and it's very difficult for people to know where to go to get the authoritative data sources. It's also difficult to integrate our applications and our data and to search across the information silos that we have. So we're really looking at what can we do to create an architecture and a roadmap to move forward to make it easier for people to have that kind of one-stop storefront to find the information that they need to do their jobs at Kennedy.
All right, so there's a lot going on there. Let's jump back on a couple things. The refresh cycle. Now, my understanding, at least from a NASA perspective, there's the I-3P contract is part of that refresh cycle. Is that what you guys are using, or were you guys already in the middle of a refresh contract before I-3P got put in place?
No, we are using the I-3P contracts here at Kennedy, as are the other 10 centers.
And then what kind of, are you starting to see some savings in terms of the cost per seat yet, or is that still a little bit early?
We hope that we'll see those moving forward. For us, the ACES contract transition has been challenging. I don't think the service provider understood the complexity of our environment, and as a result, computer refreshes and some other enterprise services are behind schedule. So it's been a challenging relationship. But moving forward, we realize we're going to have to work closely with them to restore user confidence. We have to make sure that we have enough people on the ground and the right enterprise and business processes in place to execute the work in front of us. And more than anything, just kind of recommit to customer satisfaction with that contract.
Was there something about your environment that was challenging? Meaning, it seems to me the way you described it is these are laptops and desktops, but is there something more going on?
I don't think that there is anything unusual about Kennedy, but NASA itself is a large agency with 10 different centers. These contracts are moving us to more of an enterprise model. Anytime when you move from 10 different center models to a single enterprise model, it creates some level of complexity that a contractor is going to have to deal with when they come in.
Okay, I think that's it's interesting because people don't realize that you think, oh, well, it's laptops and desktops. Well, it is, but there's always something more about that than it's just not that simple. Let's talk a little bit about part of the refresh is Windows 7, Office 2010. The other one is, I think you mentioned for Macintosh computers or Apple computers, there's also a part of the refresh. Is that correct?
Right. Office 2, and they're moving to the Office 2011 application, and it's got the Snow Leopard operating.
Is there any concern on your end about the applications and how they integrate with the Windows 7?
Yeah, anytime we step up to a new operating system and also to a new Office automation suite like Office 2010, we have to make sure that all the third-party applications that we're running will be compatible with those. And in some instances, we do find that we have to upgrade those applications along the way. But at the same time, a lot of those applications were being upgraded by the vendors anyway, and we might not have been able to move to the most recent version of that application if we had stayed on Windows XP or on Office 2007. So in general, it's a necessary step, and I think one that our users are happy that we're making.
I know I got the Windows 7 update, and it was a little odd at first. You kind of, okay, how do I save this again? Because it wasn't right in front of you. But then once you get used to it, it's like anything else. Over time, makes things a little bit easier. One of the things you brought up was the encryption of mobile devices. It became a much higher priority. Obviously, there's been some IG reports of the congressional testimony in the Hill. It was not the most pleasant experience for, I think, your CIO, Linda Cureton. But give me some sense of that encryption, that process by which you are encrypting the mobile devices, specifically the laptops.
Well, we're working really closely with our ACES contractor to deploy a solution, and it's going to be based on Symantec PGP, which is the application that we use. We're in a pilot phase right now where we're starting to push that solution out to the laptops that we have at Kennedy. I think we've just in the last couple of weeks done the first 10 or 15 folks. Over the next several months, we're going to be looking to encrypt all of that laptop population, which is more than 3,000. So it's an important priority to us. Historically, there is some risk when you push out a solution like that it will cause some problems with your computer. But I think we had like a 1% failure rate with our previous solution. We hope that, again, it'll be small. We make sure that we back up all the users' data before we go to the hard drive encryption. And then, we push the application out and hopefully have a lot of success with it.
So just so I understand, when you say push it out, is this something where the user brings the laptop to your systems administrator, your security folks, and they then encrypt it? Or is it really a push in the sense of the word?
We initially loaded the application onto the new ACES laptops. It takes the system administrator making a follow-up trip to the user. So it's not the user going to the system admin, but it's actually the technician coming to the user just to activate the account and to get it going.
And as far as the encryption, I think you said it was a hard disk encryption. So that obviously,
right.
if it gets lost, you still need the username, password, or are you guys using the HSPD12, secure identity cards for logical access?
We are using both right now. The Symantec PGP solution, we're still working through a couple issues. When we start off, it may be user ID and password, but the intent is to use the HSPD12 card in long term.
And how's that going to work? Is there a reader connected to the laptop, or is it being used a different way?
Typically, the laptops will have a slot in the side of the laptop where you can actually slide the card in and authenticate.
All right, very nice. I think a lot of agencies are going down that path, so it's good to hear that you guys are starting to work out some of the kinks, because I know it's always tough. The other priority you mentioned that I'd like to catch up with you is that information management initiative. I think this is a issue so many agencies are wrestling with, commonly known as the big data issue. Give me a sense of how you guys are dealing with it. How are you integrating data? How are you making it easier for people to find different sets of information that could help them do their job better?
Well, we're not very far down the road on this, but right now what we've started doing is we're really just trying to map what our current environment looks like. And we're trying to look at what are all the configuration management tools that we have out there? What are the project management applications? And let's map what we've got, and then let's kind of create that 5-year, that 10-year down the road picture of what we want to be. And then work together to develop the roadmap. But the challenge in a lot of cases is everybody agrees that we want to make it easier to find information and to integrate the data, but also everybody kind of is locked in on, you know, a solution that they already have. And so we've got to come together, and it's as much about social or cultural engineering and agreeing that we want to move forward, establishing some standards and some policies, and then executing that roadmap that will allow us to tie the information and the data together and to agree on the places where we find it. So it's one we're not very far down the road on yet, but it is one that we think has a lot of possibility as far as making the job easier for people at Kennedy.
From a timeline standpoint, is this something that you foresee kind of finishing up the as-is-to-be architecture in this fiscal year and then start going down that path of that culture change where choosing and picking the right applications and the right data sets?
Yeah, our schedule is to finish the as-is this year, and then we think it's going to take probably another year after that to really develop the 2B. In the meantime, of course, we've got to make decisions every day on how to move forward. So it's difficult when you're not, you know, when you're not starting with a blank sheet of paper and when you're trying to make a change while the world and while the programs continue to evolve. But that is our strategy, to get the as-is documented this year and then to really start building out that plan forward after that.
You mean you don't like changing the tire as the car is moving 60 miles an hour, right? Is that the one?
That's a really good analogy. That is exactly how it feels.
Or at NASA, I guess you're changing the spare engine while the shuttle is is flying 1,000 miles an hour.
Right. Maybe that's a better one.
There you go. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hit you up, talk a little bit about cloud computing and a little bit more, maybe some mobile devices. But first, you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Mike Bolger, the NASA Kennedy Space Center Chief Information Officer.
Excuse me, do you know how to get to Maine and Maple?
Do you have these in a 7.5?
How's that cooked?
Can I get that shipped overnight?
Is there a direct flight?
How long does the warranty last?
What's your soup of the day?
How do you change the ringtone?
Does it come in blue?
Does this bus stop at Elm Street?
We ask questions everywhere in life.
Is it raining out?
What time's the meeting?
How much does this cost?
Does it have four-wheel drive?
Have we met before?
What's my account balance?
Yet somehow, when we get to the doctor's office...
Any questions?
No.
We clam up. Ask questions.
What is this test for?
Are there side effects?
When do I get my results?
Questions lead to better healthcare. Go to ahrq.gov for a list of 10 questions everyone should know. Questions are the answer. Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Mike Bolger, the NASA Kennedy Space Center Chief Information Officer. Now, Mike, we were talking a lot about your priorities. We're talking about the encryption of laptops, the laptop and desktop refresh, the new information management initiative that's coming. One thing that you didn't talk about that we always have to talk about is cloud computing, as well as mobile devices, smartphones and tablet computers. Give me a sense of how you guys are looking at those two, if you will, what they're still considered leading edge technologies.
Well, my boss, Linda Curtin, who's the agency CIO, has really high interest in innovation in general and in cloud mobility and social media in particular, because those technologies enable us to operate more efficiently and better meet our user needs. And also because one of NASA's missions is to share our message with the public, and social media is a great way to do that. So at Kennedy, we've been implementing data center initiatives that both improve our current operations, but also position us better for the cloud in the future. So we're doing things like virtualizing our hardware, we're consolidating our footprint of data centers that we have here, and we're moving to a more service-oriented approach. To us, these are all the steps that help us move towards the cloud in the future. Over the next 6 months, we're also going to be collaborating with other NASA centers, investigating cloud management solutions and brokering services. And again, we think that's another step towards moving in that direction. Regarding mobile devices, we're active users of BlackBerries, iPhones, and iPads. They're all an important part of our everyday life here. We're getting ready to kick off a Bring Your Own Device pilot where we'll consider whether it's possible for employees to bring their own mobile devices and for us to load them with some software that help us introduce those into a managed environment. And for us, it's really important. We know that users want information at their fingertips wherever they go. They don't just want email. They also want mobile versions of their applications. And so we're trying to figure out how to meet their needs and how to give them some of those tools that they want.
I want to back up on one thing. You talked about collaboration with other NASA centers about cloud management and broker services. Is this the type of thing where Kennedy may offer cloud services in one functional area while Jet Propulsion Lab may offer cloud services in another cloud functional area and you guys would just buy, if you will, from each other? Is that the idea?
Could be. We have some instances where we've done some activity like that with some of our like continuity ops or replicating data from one system at one center to another center. But as much as anything, it's about sharing best practices and it's about considering whether there are any agency level contracts that we would want to put in place or brokering services so that we're all doing things in a consistent way. At this point, in general, it's about bringing the smart people across the agency together, though, and developing that strategy to move forward.
And I imagine that information management initiative that you're just starting down will probably sit in the cloud eventually in some way, because that a lot of people tell me that that's the best way to kind of deal with that big data issue is if you put it in the cloud, accessibility becomes that much easier.
Yeah, it does, and there's always questions about, well, which kind of information do I want to put in the cloud and what should be in a private cloud versus a public cloud, and those are all the kind of things that we're still working through.
Sounds like something to follow up with you on maybe a later time. The other thing you brought up was mobile devices. You're kicking off a BYOD, as they say nowadays, Bring Your Own Device pilot. Give me a sense, how big is that pilot going to be, and are you said you're putting some software potentially on the phone to manage the device, so we're talking about probably a mobile device manager type of software?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about. But we've had a lot of, I get stopped regularly by people who want to know, you know, why can't I use my own device? Why do I have to carry two if, you know, in a case where we've given them a BlackBerry or an iPhone to begin with? And so we really wanted to investigate, you know, what's in the realm of the possible here. And so what we did was we have a leadership team or leadership program here where we're developing some of our future leaders, and they're groups of five or six of these leaders who get together and who have to work a project at the center. And so we convinced one of those teams to take on BYOD as their project. And so that team is going to be getting together and they're going to look at, like you said, they're going to test some MDM tools and they're going to run them on some of their devices. They're going to find a user pool and maybe it's 20 or 25 people, and they're going to try things out. They're going to talk to legal about, are there opportunities for us to provide stipends to employees, or is that completely out of the question? They're going to help us develop the policy that we would use in this BYOD pilot, and we're going to work closely with the agency's CTO, who works for Linda as well, so that the lessons that we learned from our pilot get shared with the other centers and that, you know, again, NASA just kind of moves forward in a consistent way.
And I know that, for instance, the Veterans Affairs Department has gone down that path of the at least iPhones allowed on their network, but it's not necessarily BYOD. But there's several agencies, and I know CIOs I talk to all the time, are definitely looking at this because, as you said, people want to say, well, why do I have to carry two devices? Why can't I just carry one?
It's really to our advantage as well, because the more people who have access to their information wherever they are, they're going to be more productive that way, and we're going to be able to get a hold of them. So we think it's important, but obviously it's not something that, you know, you need to think through it. And so you've mentioned other agencies are doing it. One of the parts of the project that we outlined right up front was, let's go benchmark and let's go see what some of the best practices are, and let's see if we can't bring some of those to NASA.
All right. I think that's something that you'll get a lot of excitement about once you kick off this pilot a little bit. The other thing you talked about, productivity, is and we talked about this a little bit earlier, is the IP3P contract. This is the big set of contracts that NASA has been awarding over the last 18 months to 2 years. Things are really just starting to move right now. You mentioned the ACES contract. What other of the I3P contracts are you guys already implementing or taking advantage of for these enterprise-wide services?
Our three, or maybe depending on how you count, four others that we're actively using. The Enterprise Application Services and Technologies, or EAST contract, that's managed out of Marshall, is the contract that provides enterprise applications like our core financial system to our users. So our users here at Kennedy are very active customers of, or users of EAST. Within the next week, we're actually implementing the NASA Integrated Communications System, or NICS, contract. That's the contract that'll provide us our local area network and firewall services. So that starts April 1st. West is the Web Enterprise Services and Technologies contract. That one hasn't been released yet, but that's where we'll go to get our public-facing websites. And then the reason I said three, or depending on how you count four, there's also an enterprise service desk at the NASA Shared Services Center in Mississippi that handles our trouble calls and our service requests. So, Kennedy, we're very much on board with the I3P program and taking advantage of many of the contracts that are out there. Yeah.
We are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I always like to catch up with NASA CIOs when I talk to them about their background a little bit. How long have you been CIO at Kennedy? Where else have you worked in or outside of government? And give me the backstory. How did you get to become NASA Kennedy CIO, or how did you become part of NASA Kennedy in the first place?
I grew up in Ohio, in Oxford, Ohio, near Cincinnati, and I'm sure you know Ohio is the home of some of our greatest space heroes like John Glenn and Neil Armstrong and others. So when I was 11, my mother, who was also excited about the space program, bought me a book about NASA for Christmas. And I read the book, and my mind was made up, or maybe I should say was almost made up. You know, I decided if the major leagues didn't work out, I was going to work for NASA. And obviously, the major leagues didn't work out. And so I went to Indiana University, and I studied computer science and math, and I joined the co-op program there. After my sophomore year, I had been working at a hockey camp for a couple of years, but I wasn't a hockey player, and I realized I needed to get some skills. And when I heard Cocoa Beach, Florida, I was sold. And so I started co-oping with NASA in 1984. I ended up going full-time in 1987. Back then, there wasn't an IT department, though. So I started off working in the shuttle processing group, and I worked on joint government contractor teams that developed ground operations aerospace language applications. So that's a NASA-unique software language that is very procedural, that runs in the firing rooms in support of the test team and space shuttle processing. Since then, I've bounced around a little bit. I've worked in a number of different areas. I worked for the CFO's office for a year because I really wanted to understand how money flowed within the government and at NASA. I worked in a big project office on an IT development project for 6 years. And then I was a contracting officer's technical rep for a COTAR on the base operations contract that supports both Kennedy and the Cape Canaveral Air Force Station for about 4 years. That was a neat job because I was actually on the org chart for both NASA and for the 45th Space Wing of the Air Force. So I got insight into how the Air Force conducts business and you know, got a lot of exposure to kind of a different way of doing things, which I thought was great. So now I'm in my 6th year as the CIO at Kennedy. It's been a really interesting ride so far, and I'm really excited about what the future holds for me ahead.
That's a great backstory. I'm sorry the majors didn't work out, but I'm sure Kennedy's very happy to have you there. We are out of time, but this has been very interesting. I'm sure we could talk much longer. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today was Mike Bolger, the NASA Kennedy Space Center Chief Information Officer. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you, Jason.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.